We say tape. It's not tape anymore. Like the phone rang, as if a phone ever rings anymore, you know.
It became a part of a lexicon.
Yes, yes. Okay, so I'm treating his actual meeting with Esau as if it's just a denouement of the story. It's just, but really, it's kind of the peak thing going on here. So he comes, he recrosses the Jabbok, he joins his family, and then so he sends first the children of Zilpah, and then the children of and then the children of Leah, and then Joseph. Somebody asked, well, you keep saying 11 sons. Weren't there 12 sons? Yes, but one of them hasn't been born yet. Are there any questions before I go on? Are there any questions? No? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
And that this physical wrestling with the angel is a representation of our spiritual wrestling.
Right, exactly. And we're being encouraged to wrestle with God. All right, and he might possibly give us a little dislocated hip there. There might be some damage there. That's okay. I assume that Jacob did that limp for the rest of his life. He kind of did it in a certain kind of pride. And from then on, the Jews never ate the tendon that sticks to the hip, supposedly. At least that's what the Genesis writer says. All right, so anyway, so he comes off this sort of mountaintop experience, and he comes before Esau, and he totally humbles himself. He bows 7 times to Esau, and Esau says, hey, you're my brother. And it's sort of cool. God brings them back together. But then Esau says, hey, come on to Edom. Jacob says, I've got something else. No. Jacob does not want to go to Edom. He says, I'll just come later. Of course, he never went later, not that we know of, because he just wants to get home. All right, so he crosses over and he builds an altar there at Bethel, house of God, and he goes and he meets with his father, Isaac, who's quite old at this point, of course. All right, and then there's these little things, chapter 34, 35, and 36, tempting to skip, and we are basically going to skip them. And you might wonder, why do they do the thing with Dinah? All right, why that other thing with Tamar? Well, you have to understand, this is a story, and this is a story about the coming of the Messiah. And each one of these side stories relates to the ultimate effect that the line of the Messiah goes through Judah. Question?
Just real quick, how long were these guys living back then? Is this when they were living hundreds and hundreds?
No. I think Jacob lived to be 100. No, Joseph lived to be 110. Uh-huh. Abraham 175.
So you say Isaac kind of older. What is that?
He's well over 100.
100, okay.
But not hundreds. Well
on,
over 100.
So in Noah days, that's when they started getting into the 600s.
Right, yeah. At least the way the Bible describes it. So chapter 34 is a story about Dinah and the Shechemites. Shechem was eventually one of the centers of religion. It eventually became the capital of the northern kingdom, Samaria. All right, so it's a very important city to the Jews. And so Dinah goes over there. She finds a non-Christian, in quotes, husband. And actually, they rape her. And so Levi and Simeon decide to take everything into their own hands. They say, we'll be buddies, and we'll have a nice truce, and it'll all be great. And then they go in, and they say, hey, all we require is that you get circumcised. That's all we require. Circumcising an adult male, that kind of lays you down low for a while, apparently. All right? And so they go in, and they kill everybody. And they commit a violent act, which God would totally oppose. And because of this act, Simeon and Levi lose their birthright. All right, so that's the significance of this chapter that we're basically skipping. Because of what they did here, part of the behind-the-scenes thing is that Leah's children are fighting against Rachel's children. Rachel, at this point, has 3 children, 2 adopted, 1 natural. Leah has 8, 6 natural, 2 adopted. And all this infighting is between the children of Leah and Zilpah, as opposed to the children of Rachel and... Exactly. Bilhah. Sorry, Bilhah, I forgot your name. I do that a lot. Anyway, so that's what's going on there. And then we have the death of chapter 35, the death of Isaac, the death of Rachel, and they're buried in that cave in Machpelah, and the birth of Benjamin. That's kind of an emotional scene because Rachel finally gets her desire, which is a second son. And but in the process of giving birth to him, she dies. It's kind of a sad situation. All right, and she wants to call him Ben-Omi, which is the son of pain, essentially. And no, Jacob steps in. He's now Israel, and says, "No, he's going to be the son of my right hand, because the son of Rachel is his right hand." This is like kind of there's theological, you know, Jesus is at the right hand of God, and Benjamin is the right hand of Jacob. And then Reuben. Now that the whole part of this whole power trip, Reuben is a child of who? Leah. He goes in and he basically takes Bilhah, who's the slave woman or the concubine of Rachel, and he has sex with her. It's not a very good situation there, and because of this, he lost his birthright. So because of chapter 34 and 35, the whole situation where the birthright is going to fall on Judah, which means Jesus is going to come from the tribe of Judah, the Lion of Judah, all of that is set up. What's that beeping? Oh, well.
It's coming from the back.
Coming from the back. All right. Dan tried to fix it. It got unfixed. We'll just deal with it. All right. It's not slightly obnoxious, but I'll try to ignore it. Okay, great. Genesis 36. Here we see Esau's descendants, and we see the ninth generation, if you will. The take-home lesson from Esau is if you choose to sell your birthright, you will lose your birthright. You can't get it back. Hebrews chapter 6. Those who fall away cannot be renewed to repentance. It's too late. And do not become embittered as Esau did, all right, which could defile many. That's Hebrews 12, all right? Awesome. Now we're going to do the story of Joseph. Oh, man, it's great stuff. All right, Genesis 37, verse 2. This is the 10th of the generations. It's the generations of the children of Jacob. All right, and here we're making our transition. From chapter 37 to the end of Genesis, we're really making our transition, all right, our segue over to Exodus, because we're setting up the story of Exodus. Everything from now on focuses not on Mesopotamia. From now on, we're focusing in on Egypt. Out of Egypt, I called my son. Joseph is a prefigure of the Messiah. How can I count the ways? So many ways. Because the Messiah was king, priest, and prophet. And Joseph is a prince, a right hand to the king. He's a priest in that he intercedes for God's people to Pharaoh. And he's a prophet in that he has visions. So he's kind of a king, kind of a prophet, and kind of a priest. The story of Joseph is the story of Jesus. Joseph was born the right hand of his father. What happened? He became a slave. Where? In Egypt. He became a slave and lived among slaves. What happened? God raised him up to the right hand of the king of Egypt. That's the story of Jesus. Read about it in Philippians chapter 2. Who did not consider equality to God something to be grasped, but he took the form of a slave. He came down to Egypt. He lived amongst the slaves in Egypt, but God took him back up to his right hand. The story of Joseph, the life story of Joseph, is the life story of Jesus. And really, Joseph is Jesus, but Joseph is Jesus is us. Because we were in a relationship with God. We lost that relationship. We became slaves. And God will lift us up as well. Not to his right hand, but to be with him forever. So we too were born in a... we were not born in slavery. No, we were not. We were born innocent. We became slaves. We lived in Egypt. And God took us out of Egypt as well. So Joseph was literally taken out of Egypt. It's so cool. Hebrews 11:22 makes a big thing out of this, as it should. In fact, let's skip to the very end of Genesis. Let's go to Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25. We see this whole thing set up here. Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25. The final scene in the entire story of Genesis, where basically Joseph says, I too will come out of Egypt. But he said it in faith. He wasn't even dead yet. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I'm about to die, but God will surely come to your aid. He will take you up out of this land to the land he promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph made the Israelites swear an oath and said, God will surely come to your aid, and then you must carry my bones up from this place. Let's go to Hebrews 11, where it talks about this. We are doing a lesson about Joseph in our Bible talk a few weeks ago, and we focused in on Hebrews. We did a 7-week series on Hebrews 11, something like that?
Yep.
Pretty awesome stuff there. Hebrews 11, I think it's 22, yes. By faith, Joseph, when his end was near, spoke about the exodus of the Israelites from Egypt, and he gave instructions concerning the burial of his bones. All right? And so basically said, I too, although I'm in Egypt, I too will be in the promised land. And he recognized that. And so he has no idea really what's going on here. He doesn't realize the prefiguring going on. But he too, God will take him out of Egypt and his bones will be laid in the promised land. So many parallels between Joseph and Jesus. Because Joseph was the favorite son of his father at his right hand. Jesus is God's only son. What did Joseph do for a living? He tended sheep. And Jesus is the good shepherd. God gives Joseph a dream. He finds out he's going to be the king of the Jews. Like Jesus is the king of the Jews. And when Jesus came as the king of the Jews, his fellow Jews said, we're so glad you're our king. Thank you for ruling over us. Not exactly. Not exactly with Joseph as well. So what did Jesus' brothers decide to do to him?
Kill him.
And what did Joseph's brothers decide to do with him? Kill him. But God saved Joseph from that. So instead, he was betrayed for 20 pieces of silver. The price of a slave, because he's going to go into Egypt to become a slave, as we too were slaves. But God provides the slave price, right? He buys us back. And Jesus was also sold for 30 pieces of silver, which was approximately the price of a slave in the Roman Empire at that time. He was paid the slave's price, because as it says in Hosea 11:1, out of Egypt I called my son. All right, so he's betrayed for his brothers for 20 pieces of silver. God brought him down to Egypt to protect him from jealous brothers. God brought Jesus down to Egypt to protect him from Herod. And Joseph was raised up by God to become a king from a very humble situation, as happened with Jesus. Also, in order to be a prefigure of the Messiah, you have to save Israel. There's at least a dozen prefigures of the Messiah, including Deborah, all right, including Esther. But you can't be a prefigure of the Messiah unless you save Israel. And of course, Joseph literally saved Israel, all right? But also, the Messiah offers salvation to the Gentiles as well, and we'll see that. That Joseph saved the Gentile nations as well. And he gave them bread. He gave bread to the people. As Moses gave bread. Well, he didn't really, but He's given credit for that. And Jacob, his father, received him back from the dead. We'll go to Genesis 45:28. So do you see the parallels? If you don't see the parallels here, you're missing some pretty obvious stuff here. And the cool thing is, these things, number one, really actually happened. And they were recorded by people who had absolutely no idea what they were about. I mean, if it's not clear the Bible's inspired in this area, then I don't know what could be more evidence of the inspiration of the Bible, but even more importantly, evidence of God's providence. That is his intention to send the Messiah to save us out of Egypt. All right, so that's the introduction. All right, we're going to do a very, very brief side trip to Judah, Genesis 38. What's this about? What, Judah and Tamar, what's that about? It's about the Messiah every single time. Every one of these little side things are about, it's like, why even bother to have the book of Ruth then? The same reason we have Judah and Tamar is why we have the book of Ruth. Because really the Old Testament is a story of God's plan to save us. Now Judah did not behave particularly well here. He married Ur to Tamar. Ur died, so he gave Tamar to Onan, and Onan refused to give her children. And there's that scene there that the Catholic Church, Genesis 38:9, that's their proof text that birth control is a sin. That's a bogus proof text. You look in Genesis 38:9 if you want to find out if you're ever having an argument about birth control with a Catholic, they'll go there if they have been listening. All right, but anyway, Tamar's in a very bad situation because she can't have children. This whole idea of this theme of wanting to have children, that runs throughout Genesis, that's for sure. So what's she going to do? So she dresses up as a prostitute, knowing that her father Judah's going to come by, which doesn't say very much good about Judah, because she knew that if she dressed up like a prostitute, that Judah would go for it. That's not so good. But as a result, Perez and Zerah are born. And Perez is the firstborn, but actually Zerah's hand came out, and the midwife ties a string around the finger, and the hand comes back out, a little bit like Jacob and Esau, right? And then Perez pushes, and gets out first. And Perez is the ultimate ancestor of Boaz, who marries Ruth, who gives birth eventually to Jesse, to David, and to Jesus. So that's why Genesis 38 is there. God's predestined plan is being fulfilled. Now, Judah does not come across very well here at all. I mean, this guy was a bad person. But I'm telling you, he repented. And he's the one who saved Benjamin. He's the one who saved Joseph. And Judah literally offered his life as a sacrifice to save his brother. And really, it was Judah's faith, it was Judah's faithfulness and love of his brother, who he shouldn't have, because he's the son of my brain's just running out. The son of Leah. All right, and he should have been so jealous, but instead he was loyal to his father, he was loyal to God, and he offered his life to save for him his enemy. And it was that move that convinced Joseph, you know what, it's time. It's time to reveal myself. So that's a pretty awesome story, actually. So another of these sort of restoration stories, which is pretty great. So now we're back in Genesis 37. All right, Jacob has some dreams. He's a real dreamer, right? So the story of Joseph is our transition from Genesis to Exodus. It takes God's people from Canaan down to Egypt and explains the whole situation. Genesis 37:3. 13 chapters down, 13 to go. We're going to make it. Genesis 37, verse 3. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Oops. because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made an ornate robe for him. By the way, it's almost certainly not a coat of many colors. Sorry to burst your bubble. It probably was not a coat of many colors. It was probably a long-sleeved coat. And generally, if you're working in the fields, they give you a short... So it's kind of like he's the one who doesn't have to work. He's kind of the royal son. Whatever. You know, but you don't have to... When they do that in Sunday school, you don't have to explain to the kids. You know, it's just, you can go for the coat of many colors. Doesn't really matter. All right, just so you know. It wasn't three wise men. It didn't say how many there were, and they didn't go to the manger. It's okay. Your faith is still intact, right? Good. Anyway, he shows favoritism. And remember, God does show favoritism. Don't forget that. All right. Anyway, but Joseph is very foolish here. He kind of wears this coat. I got the coat. He goes out into the fields. And when he got into the fields, you don't wear this coat. You know, it's like going to, you know, to football wearing your suit or something like that. It's like, dude, you know, all but three of his brothers are like totally hating him already. The guy should have been maybe clued into that at least a little bit. So Joseph, although Joseph is one of the most endearing characters in the entire Bible, he's one of those people, it's like he and Daniel are the hardest to find chinks in their armor, probably, I would say. He's kind of the youthful adolescent, you know, clueless youthful adolescent, okay? Do we have any adolescents here? Yes. Philip. Okay, I thought you were. Anyway, so Joseph has a dream. In the first dream, the 11 bushels of wheat bow down to him. Now, was that a good idea to tell that dream to his brothers? Could he have maybe kept it to himself?
Not very wise.
I'm the guy with the long sleeves. And,
no, you know? It's God's plan.
It is God's plan, and it worked out. That's what's going on here. The bottom line is, every time they try to destroy God's plan, God uses that to fulfill his plan. Yeah. That's the cool thing about this story. It's awesome. Yes?
Yeah, you said if he had more mature judgment, he wouldn't end up in Egypt.
Right. If they hadn't tried to kill him, if they hadn't sold him as a slave, the plan would not have been fulfilled. All right, so that's a cool thing about this story. All right? So anyway, and then the second dream is even more intense, because in the second dream, the 11 stars are bowing down, but also the moon and the sun. So the implication is that Jacob will even bow before Joseph. But you know what? That's exactly what happened. Exactly what happened. And you know these three visits? The three visits are really about Joseph realizing, until my father comes down, the dream's not going to be fulfilled. So that's why, first of all, there's only 10, right? And they say, all right, we got to bring the 11th. He's the 12th, right? We didn't lose track, all right? And then they bring the 11th son. No, that's not good enough. We've got to bring the father down here. So that's kind of what's going on. Joseph had a strong sense of God's predestination in his life, that he was the chosen one. Interestingly, arguably, he wasn't the chosen one. Judah was. So that's interesting right there. Anyway, so throughout this, we see the providence of God. His sons decide to kill Joseph. Ironically... All right. In the process, they put God's plan into action to save his people. The Jews decided to kill Jesus, having no idea that in doing so, they were bringing about God's plan of salvation. And all the prefiguring here is kind of in your face, don't you think? The providence of God in fulfilling his promise to Abraham is the main theme. The entire Joseph story is about the providence of God fulfilling his prophecies to make him into a nation, to all nations to be blessed, for kings to come from him, and for his descendants to be like the stars of the sky and the grains of sand in the sea. All right, so that's sort of cool stuff. So as you know, he's carried down into Egypt as a slave. There's some interesting details here. It's the sons of Leah who decide to kill him. Except for Reuben, right? Reuben kind of redeems himself a little bit here. Reuben says, no, you can't do that. Don't kill him. Throw him into this pit. And the commentators believe his hope was their temper tantrum would end. He'd come back, pull him out of the pit, and bring him home to his dad. I think that's probably correct. But while he walks away, they pull him out of the pit and sell him as a slave to the Midianites. And the Midianites go down and they sell him to one of the chief counselors or people to Pharaoh. And his name is Potiphar. So Reuben was the black sheep of the family, but he redeems himself by demanding they not kill him. And in this story, I'm not reading all this stuff. I'm doing a lot of skipping here. I've got to do a lot of skipping. It's worth noting that Judah is the one who comes up with the plan, all right, to sell him for 30 pieces of silver. The irony there, of course, is then his descendant, Jesus, is then sold for 30 pieces of silver, the slave price. There's a lot of irony there. The cool thing is, this is what actually happened. This is what actually happened. To dream of this story would be crazy, but to have it actually happen in history, it's pretty amazing, I would say. That's what I think. All right, so Jacob, if we go to chapter 38, verse 29 through 36, let's read that, because it's very, very emotional. Chapter 38, verses 29 through 36. Oops, sorry, chapter 37, probably. Yes, okay, good. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes, he went back to his brothers and cried, "The boy isn't there, where can I turn now?" They got Joseph's robe, they slaughtered a goat, they dipped the robe in blood, they took the ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this, examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animals have devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave." So his father wept for him. So, and the way the story turns out, it is so awesome. But it's a pretty sad deal. It was, around 22 years later that he got his son back. 22 years later. He was in the deepest mourning for 22 long years. So Joseph's in Potiphar's house. Let's read 39 verse 2. That's right. We already did 38. That's why I made that mistake. 39 verse 2. And this is kind of the theme throughout these chapters. It says here, verse 2, "The Lord was with Joseph, so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. He only worried about where his next meal was coming from. Everything else he entrusted." He was a very busy government employee, basically. So he's off at work a lot, essentially. And Joseph is taking care of his household. And so, we see God's plan to bless the descendants of Abraham is coming true. And you know the story. I don't need to tell you the story here. We can see Joseph's righteousness. And his righteousness, as opposed to, say, Reuben, his brother Reuben, who took Bueller, and as opposed to Judah, who took Tamar and all that sort of stuff, Joseph is pretty awesome. But you've got to remember, if Joseph had not been thrown into prison, then he would not have met the cupbearer. And if he'd not met the cupbearer, he wouldn't have been raised up to the right hand of Pharaoh, and God's people wouldn't have been saved, and the nations would not have been saved. So trusting in God might require getting thrown into a pit, possibly. Maybe. It might cause you to be thrown into prison. Unjustly, hopefully not justly, right? It's kind of hard for them to do that to you justly. Hopefully not. But if he hadn't been thrown into prison, God's plan would not have happened. So there's a lesson to us. Because we have what Joseph did not have. We have the Bible. He didn't have the Bible. We have the promises fulfilled. Remember in Hebrews 11? They saw these things only from afar. Just they very, very dimly viewed these promises. We have these promises, and yet Joseph was faithful. And he refused and refused and refused the plea of Potiphar's wife to be unfaithful to her husband, and he refused to do it. He was a loyal servant. And you know the story. She asks him one more time. He refuses. She grabs his shirt. He goes running out of there, and it looks bad. And she uses the whole situation to get him thrown in prison. I thought she loved him. I thought she thought he was great. She was just looking for a tumble in the sheets there or something like that. All right, good. So, so he's now in prison. Now, the story of Joseph in prison is very similar to the story of Joseph in Potiphar's house, is it not? All right, let's read Genesis 39:21. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. When is the Lord with us? All the time. All right? Even when those close to us die, like Carrie Schultz's sister died just yesterday. That's a pretty tough time. We need to be there for her. Paul and Carrie Schultz, her sister died yesterday. At a fairly young age of ALS, a very, very sad situation. And David, we should be praying for David, who was a member of the church here at one time. But, you know, when stuff like that happens, we're tempted to think God is not with us. But we need to see that God can use that. In Romans 8, 31, all things work out for the good of those who love him or are called according to his purpose. I believe it's true. Do I always believe it's true? Maybe not. All right, we're tempted not to believe it. But let's read this one more time. I want us to read it carefully. The Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted his favor in the eyes of the prison warden. He was loyal. This word is chesed. C-H-E-S-E-D. This is that loving faithfulness. God is faithful to us. He's lovingly faithful to us. He's loyal to us. What's he want from us? To offer him chesed as well. Faithful, loving, loyalty. Well, you know what? That's exactly what Joseph did. At a young age, Jacob is probably closer to 100 years old when he kind of came around. But Joseph at a young age is showing the same loyalty to God, that covenant loyalty that God is showing to him. And so Joseph was raised up to be ruler over the prison. The prison warden says, "Hey, you know, he'll take care of everything. I'll just, you know, sit in my office and eat grapes," or whatever he did. I don't know. All right. And then there's these two prisoners come in and they have a dream. And Joseph says, "Hey, I can interpret dreams." No. Isn't that what Daniel said? I can interpret dreams. No, Daniel said, "I can't interpret dreams. Only the Lord, only God can interpret dreams." It's interesting because Joseph had two dreams, and here there's two dreams, the cupbearer and the baker, and later on Pharaoh had two dreams. So there's two dreams, one about a guy with three bunches of grapes, right? The other about a guy with three loaves of bread, and so he interprets the cupbearer's dream. 3 days from now, you're going to be taken back to Pharaoh's right hand. And when you do, I just have one little tiny request. Please remember me. Whoops. And then the baker comes out, and the baker hears the great, "Hey, man, I'm going to be returned to Pharaoh's side in 3 days. And Joseph says, "In 3 days, you're going to be lifted up on a rope. And they're going to hang you. And for the Egyptian, the worst possible thing, then they're going to expose your body." Because the Egyptians, they always want to do the whole embalming thing. So that's a pretty terrible thing, the poor baker. But God is in control. And in both in chapter 40, verse 8, and in chapter 41, verse 16, Joseph says, gives glory to God and says only God can interpret dreams. So when you're called out, go ahead and give God the glory. If something works out, don't go, that's right. Just say, you know what, it's God. I remember I was in the airport about 3 years ago, and I was trying, 2 years ago, I was trying to get to, I think it was Missouri. And the lady said, can't go, flight's canceled, we're kicking everybody off this flight. And I looked at her, I said, no, I'm going to get there today. I'm just telling you, I'm going to get there today. But then I was careful. I said, God's going to get me there. So all the other people that kicked off the flight, they let me on anyway, telling me I shouldn't get on. I got there. The connecting flight was delayed by 2 hours. The pilots never showed up. They slept in. Anyway, so that stuff like that. But when stuff like that happens, we need to give the glory to God, not to ourselves, right? Amen. So Joseph now is going to be in Pharaoh's palace. Pharaoh has two dreams. One dream of fat cows, followed by seven lean cows. And then seven heads of fat grain, followed by seven sort of weak, dried up, useless heads of grain. You'd think that his magicians and astrologers could have figured this dream out. It's not that hard to interpret, but he couldn't. It's very similar to what happened in Daniel. Very, very similar situation to Daniel in Daniel chapter 2. So then the cupbearer is like, that's right. Oh, yeah. You know, there's this guy. He is a slave and he is in prison. But he told me I'd be raised up in 3 days and here I am. So let's bring him in. All right. 2 years later, two more years in prison. That's right. Genesis 41, verse 16. Genesis 41:16. Uh-oh, I'm getting in trouble time-wise. All right. I cannot do it. Interpret the dream. Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. And you know the answer. The answer was 7 years of drought, plenty, followed by 7 years of drought. Now you're going to have to hire a really smart, really sharp overseer who knows how to run businesses like jails and Potiphar's house, for example, to kind of oversee the collecting of this grain. So Pharaoh gets the idea. But of course, God's behind all this. And Joseph becomes essentially the ruler of Egypt. He became the vizier. All right, because the Pharaoh's kind of removed from the scene. He's like the Chinese emperor. And essentially, for all practical purposes, Joseph ran Egypt. That's sort of cool. 41 verse 57. And this is like us, right? Someday we're going to be rulers over the hen house or whatever. 41 verse 57. Not the hen house, but you know. 41 verse 57. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe. Remember, what was the prophecy? All nations will be blessed through you. And I just imagine Joseph standing there like, I can't believe this is happening to me. I'm giving bread to all the nations. What are the chances? A slave thrown in prison, keys thrown away, and God raised him up and he saved the world. He didn't just save the world, though. He saved his family, right? And again, who's this story about? It's about God, but it's also about Jesus. Jesus, who did not consider equality with God something he held on to. He let go of it. He took the form of a slave. And what did God do? He raised him up to his right hand so that every knee would bow, just like every knee bowed to Joseph, the vizier of Egypt. Yes?
Real quick, so you would say that Genesis,
absolutely. Of course. Absolutely. Some of them applied more to the immediate descendants. For example, kings will come from you, one of those kings being Jesus. But others of them applied secondarily to the Jews and primarily to us. All nations will be blessed through you. All right. And then the whole children as as many as the stars of the sky and the grains of the sand of the sea. Well, I mean, his spiritual descendants are much more than his physical descendants ever were. So you know the story. Famine in Canaan, 10 sons come down. All right, but it doesn't complete the story, does it? And so Joseph, he doesn't reveal himself. And instead he puts the money back in their sacks and sends them on their way and says, don't you ever come back to me again. This is 2 years into the drought, by the way, 2 years in. He says, don't you dare come back unless you bring your son. They're like, oh, the thing is, your brother, sorry. And the thing is, they made the mistake because he's kind of in charge of the whole situation because he's having this conversation. He really knows what's going on. So do you have any other brothers? Do you have a father? Tell me about it. And they tell him about their brother, Benjamin. Oh, yeah, Benjamin, he's the one. We had to leave him behind because he's the most loved by our father. Oh, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, he knew that already, but he's pulling it out. So he says, okay, great. If you're going to come back for more grain, just make sure you bring your brother, Benjamin. And as proof of that, we need to leave somebody behind. So they leave, I believe it's Simeon, right? They leave Simeon behind. Am I not mistaken? Am I not right there? Yes. They leave Simeon behind. And what Joseph's trying to do, he's trying to find out, do they actually love each other at this point? Are they loyal to their father? And do they love each other? Have they changed? That's the real question. He's trying to find out if they've really changed. And there's pretty good evidence they've changed. Yeah.
John, the three figures is just about Jesus. It can be like, for example, Joseph, a figure of David. Because they both were in captivity.
Absolutely.
Before they became rulers.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Moses as well. Right.
Sure.
But see, David, Moses, and Joseph are the three chief prefigures of Jesus in the Bible. So the parallels between them are because they're all prefiguring Jesus. All right. Moses also was at the right hand of Pharaoh. He also left to become a slave to live amongst the slaves. All right. All this is part of the story. But it's also what really happened, which is sort of awesome. All right. So anyway, so he puts the money back in the sack and he keeps Simeon. He says, I'm keeping Simeon here and that until you bring Benjamin. All right. So they're between a rock and a hard place. So they have to go back there and explain to their father, yeah, you know, I know you don't really want us to, but we're going to have to bring Benjamin down there in order to get your son back. Now, of course, a lot of this has to do with the fact that the children of Rachel are his favorite children. The children of Leah, not so much. All right, but is he going to start showing love to all of his children rather than just his favored ones? So anyway, they go back, and I think it's another couple of years. They finally run out of food, so they're desperate. So finally, the sons talk him into sending them back with Benjamin. But let's look at a scene here. 43 verses 8 and 9. 43 verses 8 and 9. How am I doing? All right, great. I've got a negative 2 minutes to go. But we're pretty good here. 43 verse 8 and 9. Okay, good. Then Judah said to Israel, his father, send the boy along with me. And we will go at once so that we and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. Just like Jesus. Just like Jesus. I will take the responsibility. All right. I will bear the blame before you all my life. As it is, if we had not delayed, we could have gone and returned. And they go and they meet with Joseph. And look at 44 verses 32 through 34. We're seeing the restoration of Judah to the place of favor so that eventually he will become the blessed son. All right, 32 through 34 says here, your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy. I'm going to stay in Egypt as a slave to save the favored son. And I see some parallels between that and Jesus as well. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? How can Jesus go back to the son unless he saved us from our situation? All right, and so he does. And it's this right here. This is what finally convinces Joseph. Joseph says, you know what? I don't know about the rest of them, but Judah loves his father. Judah is faithful to God. Judah has repented of his sins. He's showing loyalty, chesed. So now he reveals himself. You know the rest of the story. So they go back. All right, they go back. They bring their father down to Egypt. And, you know, out of Egypt I called my son. They're setting this whole thing up. And then Jacob and all 11 sons bow down to Joseph, the king of Egypt, fulfilling the prophecy. That's great. Skip a few slides. Joseph saves Israel. He tells Jacob, don't be afraid to go down to Egypt, 46 verse 3, for I will make you into a great nation there in Egypt. All right, and let's read 46 verse 30. All right, we're coming down the straightaway here. 46 verse 30. Israel said to Joseph, now I'm ready to die since I've seen for myself that you are still alive. Just like Abraham received his son back from the dead on the third day. Similarly, we see Jacob receiving Israel, receiving his son back from the dead. All right, and we too will be raised from the dead. We too will be resurrected at the end of time. And then we have Genesis 49. We're only going to look at the prophecy with regard to Judah. If you look at there, he goes through Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. Reuben's out because of what he did with Bilhah. Simeon and Levi, they're out because of what they did in Shechem. So the chosen son will be the one who's willing to sacrifice his life to become a slave in Egypt. Judah will become the favored son. He says, your father's sons will, verse 8 through 11, your father's sons will bow to you, which is, of course, exactly what happened as Judah became the tribe of that ruled Israel through David. He says, you're going to be a lion because David was the lion and Jesus is the lion of Judah. You'll possess the staff and the scepter. You'll be the king, the one to rule over my people. Nations will obey you. You will be Shiloh, the one who will come to Israel. You're going to have a donkey and a colt, the foal of a donkey. And you're going to have wine and blood of grapes. Do you see some prefiguring of the Messiah there? I do. I see that kind of going on there. All right. So now we're in chapter 50. We got there. All right. Well, I know, but we're going to say it, make a couple comments before we end out. All right. Chapter 49, 29 through 50, 14, as requested, Jacob is carried back out of Egypt, and he's buried in that cave. So he's buried in the promised land. Basically, all these patriarchs needed to be buried in the promised land. Because the promised land is what? That's the foreshadow of heaven. So Abraham is buried there. Isaac is buried there. Jacob is buried there. And even Joseph has enough faith to realize when God comes and saves us, as I'm sure he will, I too need to be buried in the promised land. So God's plans are fulfilled. What a great way to end Genesis. Joseph, the prefigure of the Messiah, dies, but he leaves behind a promise of his resurrection in being taken up out of the ground and to be in the promised land. God will fulfill his promises to Abraham, both physically, when he brings his people out of Egypt, and spiritually, when he takes us out of slavery to sin and eventually brings us into the promised land, heaven, to be with God forever. And by the way, in Exodus 13, 19, sure enough, they dug up the bones and brought them back, and Joseph was buried in the promised land. All right. Good. We're done. 5 minutes over. Sorry about that. Yes. So we're going to have a class in spring, of course.